Blog Talk Radio.
Informed, not inflamed. Sports.
And hi, everyone. It is Monday, October 26th, the day before the Mets and the Royals hit the field for the 111th World Series. This is the first of two shows for you. Tomorrow, I will speak to Ken Singleton, former major leaguer, now a broadcaster with the Yankees. But today, my guest is Mike Maddux. He is the pitching coach for the Texas Rangers, who lost a heartbreaking series to the Blue Jays, who eventually lost to the Royals for the AL pennant. Mike is also a longtime friend from Las Vegas. He pitched in the major leagues for 15 years with nine teams. We'll talk about that and a lot more. Mike, first of all, welcome, and also congratulations on a great season.
Well, thanks, John. Thanks for having me on. We did have a great season, but as all great seasons come to an end, somebody's having a greater year and they continue to play, and that would be the Mets and the Royals.
All right. Well, we'll talk about your season, but let's talk about the Mets and the Royals now. I think this is a tough series to call. I like the Mets starting pitching. I worry about their youth in a series like this. I like the Royals' experience of being there, plus their defense, team speed, and I like their middle relief. So I think I kind of give the edge to the Kansas City Royals. What are you seeing?
Man, it's a tough one. You know, I think you got two equally balanced ball clubs that they're constructed a little differently in the fact that the Mets are really, really bullish with that young starting pitching, man. They are top of the line. A couple young guys with good arms. What they lack in experience, they make up with savvy. I don't think they backed down from anything this year. And it seems like the tougher the games got and the more important the games got, the better they pitched. So their starting pitching has just been tremendous. The Royals, on the other hand, the Royals, on the other hand, are built pretty much on the back end of their bullpen, where they try to shorten the game to six innings. That if they get five innings out of their starters, they can run the pen out there for the next four. So, you know, it's a battle of one team starting pitching versus the other team's bullpen.
Do the stats bear out that the Royals actually hit power pitching better than most teams?
You know, the Royals, every team has a mantra, and I think everybody's mantra is kind of like, you know, look for the fastball. But you may have some teams that look for the fastball, and the Royals are definitely one team that hunts the fastball. So they really don't care how hard you throw. As long as you're throwing a fastball, they're going to be ready for it. And I think that's really what they do well is that everybody's setting fastball just about every pitch.
You touched a little bit on the psychology of the young kids, but talk about, you know, you and the Rangers lost two tough World Series. How difficult is it to bounce back and to get back there again like the Royals are doing?
You know, I think once you get to that so close feeling that when you fall short and you don't, you know, you're not able to grasp that golden ring, it makes you try harder. It makes you want it more because you know what it smells like. You know what it tastes like. You just didn't seal the deal. And I think that really can make you hungrier. It's going to make you smarter, and it's going to help you relax when you get to that situation again. And I think that's what we're seeing with the Royals, the fact that these guys came so close a year ago and pretty much have the same team, that they've added a player or two. But these guys that lost out last year, they're playing with an edge and they're playing with a vengeance. The Royals are looking really good.
Yeah. How about the heads of the young pitchers on the Mets? And you touched on this before, too. Do things change for someone young like that when you're in a World Series, when all of a sudden you kind of wake up and you go, oh, my gosh, we're in the World Series. I'm a step away from the promised land here. Is that difficult for young pitchers?
It can be. I think it's difficult for all pitchers. Probably more so for the veteran pitcher, to be honest with you, because they're the ones that have logged the time for all those years and maybe get one shot at it. So those guys might try a little bit harder than the young guys that, like, hey, man, heck, this is kind of cool. I've been playing a year and I'm here already. This is kind of neat. You know, that you just hope they get to do it again and again. And that's where, you know, these young guys are, they're mature for their ages, that's for sure. They've come through the system. Nobody really flew through that minor league system. Everybody made their pit stops along the way, and I think the Mets did a great job of developing their own in this situation. And these three guys that got pitching games 1, 2, and 3 with Harvey, DeGrom, and Syndergaard, man, they got a lot for you, and I think they're fighters, man. They're not going to back down from anybody, regardless of their difference in ages or their difference of major league time.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the perspective from a pitching coach and what Terry Collins, the manager, and what the pitching coach over the Mets did. I thought they did a great job of preserving their young arms. Obviously, the whole thing with the Tommy John on Harvey. Harvey was a big thing. But there seems to be a lot of times when you see young pitchers, and even though they're young and they're raw, a lot of them aren't used to pitching in September and October, and they kind of seem to fizzle out. You had Syndergaard and DeGrom. You had them actually pitching, coming in relief, closing out the Cubs, and they were still pretty powerful. I think they did a great job over there preserving these young arms.
Well, I think you got to give a little tip of the hat to the organization and to Dan Worthen, the pitching coach for the Mets. He's been with these guys since they came up and since they first came to Major League camp a few years back. You know, he's been the one common denominator with all these pitchers, because I think Dan's been around for about 7 or 8 years with the Mets, so give him a little credit on this. But one thing that they have done is they have monitored innings, and they've done it early in the year, so that when you do pitch late in the season, you don't come up against that hardened limit or that deadline that this guy can only throw X amount of innings. So if you preserve him earlier in the year, it gives you more wiggle room on the end. And I think that the challenge for the young guys, as you mentioned earlier, about pitching in September and pitching in October, let's not forget the fact that these guys also pitched in February. And that's one of the biggest hurdles that pitchers have to overcome, is starting in February and pitching all the way into October. Because when we come to the minor leagues, it's you start in March and you're done August 31st or September 1st, right around there. So to add those extra month and a half on, just with the rigors of a 162-game schedule, then factor on the postseason, I mean, it's quite an adjustment that these young men have to make. But by curtailing the innings earlier in the year, like I said, it leaves them stronger at the end, and that's really ultimately where you need to be your strongest.
Now, we are talking with Mike Maddux, former Major League pitcher and current pitching coach for the Texas Rangers. Go back for me in the playoffs. What was happening in the dugout of that final game with the Blue Jays up in Toronto? Joey Batts flips the bat after hitting the homer off Sam Dyson. What was really going on there? And were you guys worried about the fans?
Well, what a weird inning, I guess, needless to say. That the seventh inning of that ball game is a whole story outside of the rest of the series. You know, we started off with some routine plays that we don't make, and next thing you know, we're in a predicament. We miss a pop-up that goes down as a fielder's choice, and we're sitting there like, okay, let's go. Now it's a tie game, but we're okay. We got right guy on the mound who we want, and then all of a sudden it imploded right, you know, it exploded right in front of us. You know, the fuse, you know, we kind of lit that fuse in our own self, you know, early, but it came down to that one pitch, and I don't think anybody was really watching the theatrics of Bautista. You know, I think I didn't even want to watch it. You know, I just saw the swing and said, oh, geez, man, that's the worst thing we want right now. So, you know, just trying to run, okay, we got a lefty down there, what are we going to do? But while he's running the bases, next thing you know, you get guys are, you know, tempers are flaring and, you know, everybody's on the field. Okay, we got to be peacemakers. We go out there and, you know, you play five games and they're all gut-wrenching like that, and only one team can win, and both teams are fighting their tails off. And tempers flare, and that happens. And you know, the theatrics that Bautista had, yeah, they were over the top, and no doubt about it. And I don't think that Sam Dyson or the people on the field, in our field and in our dugout, we're not the only ones that took offense to it. So, you know, it is what it is, and, you know, sometimes guys make a bed, they got to sleep in it, and there's more games against them in the future.
Now, were you worried about your safety at all with the fans there?
Okay, once in the top half of that inning, yeah, when Russell Martin threw the ball back to the pitcher and it hit Shin-Soo Choo's bat and rolled out there like a beautiful bunt, and heads up to our, you know, our third base coach, Tony Beasley, and Rougned Odor, where he came running home on that throw. Well, that's the right play. That's a live ball. Mm-hmm. And it took a little bit of chatting with the home plate umpire at that point, Del Scott, who waved off the play. But when Jeff Bannister, our manager, went out there and said, hey, man, that's a live ball. And then when Del caucused with the rest of the crew, and they said, yes, that ball is in play and the run scores. And that's when all of a sudden things started falling from the sky, and it was amazing. You know, we pulled our team off the field, and it was coming from the third deck. People are throwing full water bottles and adult beverages from way up top, and it, unfortunately, said the fans were the ones getting hit, the ones that were sitting down behind the dugout and next to the dugout. They were the ones that were getting pelted. Fortunately, nobody on our team got pelted, but Sin Chu Chu was on deck or at the plate, and he came in, he took his helmet off, and we're all screaming at him to leave his helmet on, and no sooner does he put it on, there goes a water bottle flying right beside him. So it was, did we ever feel, you know, threatened for our safety? Not really. We just were dodging all the things that were coming from the upper deck and from the stands. I mean, you get 50,000 passionate people in there, and they thought they were at a hockey game, I think, and it was like a hat trick, and they started throwing stuff on the field.
Was that the weirdest inning or weirdest game that you've seen in your career, either as a coach or a player?
It right up there with the top of them, man. And that was the seventh inning was 53 minutes long.
Yeah,
that was just a crazy, crazy inning that. And I tell you what, it's like slow motion right now because it meant so much to both teams.
Yeah.
That it couldn't happen fast enough. It just slowed down, and you know, the ground crew's out there trying to clean up the field. No sooner do they get it picked up, here comes the next onslaught. And we wait again, and then they finally get out of the inning, and then we went out there, and that's when all, you know, everything went downhill for us from there. But great series, great team, and it was just a wild and wacky series, and all highlighted in that 1-7 thing in Game 5.
Yeah, wow. Well, you know, Canadians are very violent people anyway, so. I say that as
I'd
a joke.
I'd say 7th inning, I don't know if they have a last call there, but I think that had a lot to do with why things were being thrown.
Yeah, it could have been. Could have been. Okay. Let's hit a couple of other things in baseball, too. Interesting issue, the Jays-Royals series where reliever Aaron Loop was dropped from the roster. And he wouldn't have been allowed back on because he had to leave for a family emergency. That's kind of tough on the team. Give me your thought on that rule, the bereavement rule during the middle of the playoffs for Major League Baseball. What do you think should be done there?
Well, right now, the bereavement rule, I think it's a great thing. You know, the game of baseball is drawn out over, you know, between spring training and postseason, 8 months. And just the regular season, it's 6 months long. And 180 games that we're out there every day. Now, you know, it's men that play baseball. It's not just baseball players. It's men. It's husbands. It's fathers that play this game. And we all have families. Everybody has families. And when they brought in the bereavement rule, it was the greatest thing because now when somebody does have an issue with an illness or, God forbid, a death in the family, before you had to play short. You know, that guy might have been a starting pitcher. Well, he's gone, and now you're scampering because you can't replace him. Well, they brought in bereavement where, you know, the guy has an issue, so he's able to go away, and you can replace him, you know, without sending anybody down. You know, it's basically you get to borrow a player from your own system for a minimum of 3 games and a maximum of 7. So the bereavement is a 3-day to 7-day window, but it allows your team to play at full strength. That's a good thing. A couple years back, we expanded that to a paternity leave because before, you know, people were going on illnesses, and we said, well, what's wrong with somebody, you know, becoming a father for the first time, second time, third time? You know, your wife goes into labor. Well, why should we play short for that if the guy's going to go back for the birth of his children or be with his wife after the birth? And they said, yeah, okay, that kind of makes sense. So we come up with a paternity leave, and it goes with bereavement and paternity. So paternity is 1 to 3 days, a minimum of 1, a maximum of 3. So those are good things. Now we get into the postseason, we're not going to honor those. And they say that if a player is replaced on the roster, he cannot play in the next series. So if you're in game 1 of the divisional series and you twist an ankle and you can't play games 2 and 3, we don't know if you can play game 4, but right away you can't play games 1 and 2, and you say, well, man, I'd like to replace him. But if you replace him in games 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, well, then and you advance to the division or the championship series, you would not be eligible for that series of seven games. You would then be able to be reinstated for the World Series if your team did advance. So that they're holding an entire series against you if you're not able, you know, to complete the series as an active player. And I think that in the we should honor bereavement and paternity in those cases as well, because you know, nobody really times it, you know, when they want to have children, that, well, we can't have it, you know, the third week of October because we might be in the playoffs, you know, and then nobody really does that. So yeah, I don't think that we should be able to have that latitude to treat men as people who play the game, you know, that are husbands and fathers, and why not carry that into the postseason? It only makes good sense.
Well, and it does make sense. At the same time, too, you know, that rule could, you know, is designed to stop any roster hijinks during the playoffs. So are there exceptions you make? Is it just for bereavement? Is it not for injury? Because, I mean, you don't want someone kind of filling in, okay, I need somebody here because we're going up against this team here, but I don't need them if we're going against the other team. Is there a way to make the exceptions?
Well, you know, roster manipulation is why we don't have it. And we have seen it in the past where game one of a series, they have a guy on the roster and he strikes out four times and they go, well, that didn't work. So they went ahead and said he had some type of issue and they took him off the roster and they added somebody for the remainder of the series. And we said, yeah, that's not very ethical. That's not the way the rules are designed. You know, as long as we did have a committee or some type of a watchdog over that situation, whether they be a doctor's note or, you know, as long as MLB had their thumb on it and they were the ones that had to approve or disapprove of anything, I think it could go well. As long as we all play by the same set of rules and we had, you know, a standard jury or judge that could come in and take it on a case-by-case note. But, you know, just to stay away from those hijinks, as you mentioned, that those rules are there to protect players and their families, you know, not so much to protect the team's roster. So as long as we use it the way the rules are designed, I think we should really push forward with it.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's going to be a topic of conversation in the off season once you sit down for the baseball meetings. Let's talk about you a little bit. Reading some stuff that the Los Angeles Angels, they'd like to have another Mike in their dugout out there. And any truth that the Los Angeles Angels are talking to you about maybe being their pitching coach?
Well, if they are, they don't have my number. That's for sure. I haven't spoken with them. You know, a lot of people have their little start rumors and things like that. But, you know, the Angels are in need of a pitching coach, and you know, what a great place. What a nice place. You know, Texas is nice. I really like Texas. I haven't re-signed right now with anybody. But, you know, there's a lot of places out there that are very nice. And where I have been working the last 7 years is very nice as well. So I'm hoping for the best. And, you know, we'll land on our feet. I just hope it's with my first choice.
So technically you're a free agent now. Are you having any conversations with anybody, or do you have any deadline, or when do you think the deadline would be that actually people can or will start talking to you?
Well, technically our contracts run through October 31st. So that's when coaches would, if you could call a coach a free agent, that's when it would be.
Okay.
Is October 31st. Yeah.
Okay. And can anybody talk to you before then?
If you have permission from the ball club.
I see. Okay.
You would have to call and seek permission.
Okay, so you've got about three or four more days, and then we may find out something, or you may find out that somebody's interested.
It could be both ways, yes. It could be both ways.
All right, okay. All right, good. Do you ever have a desire to manage?
You know, there's times I would like to, and there's other times where I say, nah, I don't want to. You know, it's why not? It's the next step. I've been in this industry a long time. I've been a pitching coach at the major league level for the last 13 years.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. That's the thing about it. I really enjoy it. I know a manager is more on call 24/7, where the pitching coach is, you know, we're on call about 12/24. So I'd rather work half the day than, you know, be on call 24/7. But as far as running a game and managing a clubhouse and the personalities that go into it, yes, I think that would be a lot of fun. That'd be a good challenge.
Cool. So really, it's the time constraint right now that would be the only drawback you see.
That would be about it. Now, I'm sensationalizing on that a bit, but sometimes it's a lot more hours and it's more off the field than on the field. You know, a lot of luncheons, a lot of dinners, and your off days, you're not off, and that's one thing. Our off days, we only get 18 of them over the course of a season, and I'd say the lion's share of those are travel days. And you get those rare off days at home. It's kind of nice to, you know, maybe go golfing or go fishing or just do a whole bunch of nothing.
You know, you talk about golf, and I remember your brother Greg, when he, Glavin, and Smoltz played together. On their days when they weren't pitching, they would go out and play golf. Do you, as pitching coach, ever get a chance to go play golf, like when you're on the road?
On an off day. I will on
you
an
do.
Off day. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And the golf game is doing well, despite only playing?
Well, it's not what it used to be. That's for sure.
So you're now a 3 handicap rather than scratch?
It's gone from 0 to 1. So, yeah, it's just not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, you are really suffering. That's really horrible. Okay. Hey, you know what? Everyone always asks me, because a lot of folks know that you and I are friends, and they go, what is it with Mike having to put his hand on the shoulder of the pitchers when he comes out to the mound? Do you have, like, healing powers in your hands when you put your hand on the shoulder of the pitcher?
No, I don't know if it's healing. I just... You know, I don't know why I ever started doing that or how it evolved, but it's one of those, I'm patting you on the back. Hey, we're in this thing together, man. You know, look at me, listen to me. And, you know, a little massage of the shoulder there and, you know, help the blood flow, kind of get, you know, more of a fatherly figure.
Yeah.
You know, it's I've stood out there on that mound and I've had coaches and managers come out and, you know, give you the hard tone and all that. And I've had other ones come by and pat you on the back. And I thought the pat on the back was always worked a little bit better than that tongue lashing. So that's how it started. It's just to let them know, hey, I'm in this with you, man. I feel for you. And this is how we're going to get out of it. And this is how we're going to get it done. So let's go.
Well,
it's all about
encouragement. You know, I've obviously, being a pitching coach, you've got to get into the heads and get into the minds and the hearts of the pitchers. As a manager, though, I mean, sometimes there's a lot of managers who manage down. They're a player's manager, and then there are other managers who are a manager to the front office, to the higher ups. If you were a manager, what would you see yourself as?
Well, I think I would accommodate both. You know, but being a former player, my heart's always in the clubhouse and with the player, because I know how hard it is to play the game. It's not an easy game to play. So I can really relate there. But bringing the two together and being the bridge between the front office and the clubhouse, I think that's what a manager has to do, and that's how you facilitate it. But I think the idea is to manage both of them. You know, tell me what your thoughts are about the players, and I'll convey to them, you know, that way you don't have to. And sometimes you got to convey the message the other way, from the player to the front office. I think the players do that now via the agents, but there are times where the front office talks to the agent and they convey it to the player. But I think you're an open line of communication, and sometimes we have to be even as a coach, you know, or a manager there in the middle, you got to be the one to filter out what's said each way. So
I
think it's
Cool. We're talking to Mike Maddox, former major league pitcher and current pitching coach for the Texas Rangers. Before I let you go, Mike, next year for the Rangers, does it? And again, we don't know if you're going to be there or not. I got to think, though, with the pitching staff coming back that you worked with, they've got a pretty good future, especially now you got Cole Hamels, and then if you got Yu Darvish coming back, I got to think that that's pretty solid staff there.
You bet, solid staff. I think you get Yu Darvish back about mid-May. Right now is the target, and you get 22 to 23 starts, maybe even 25 starts out of Yu Darvish, and Cole Hamels has been a workhorse. He's going to make every start, and he's going to throw you 200 plus innings.
Yeah.
And then you got Martin Perez. You know, he this year was his rehab year coming back from Tommy John.
Yeah.
And he threw a lot of good ball games for the Rangers. Derek Holland missed significant time last year for the second year in a row, and when he came back, he was just he was on fire. He threw good games right off the get go, and then he had a little comebacker that hit his finger, and I don't think he was ever really able to feel his finger very well after that. So,
yeah.
You know, he had some tough outings after he got hit in the finger, but just those four guys between, Cole Hamels, Yu Darvish, Martin Perez, and Derek Holland, I think you got four frontline guys that's going to give you a chance to win every game. And then, you know, whoever the fifth spot may be, if you retain Colby Lewis, you know, who was a workhorse last year that won 17 games,
mm-hmm.
or you tap on one of the young guys. So it's definitely built for now and built for the future. The mm-hmm. Ranger pitching staff is in a very good spot.
Well, I got to tell you, my heart would love to see you stay there. I would. I think that's a great spot because you've built up a great pitching staff and a staff that really, beginning of the year, I didn't think was going to be that strong. So I hope you find what you're looking for in the right spot. But if I had my druthers, I'd love to see you back in Texas.
Well, I appreciate that. I kind of like that red, white, and blue uniform myself.
All righty. Well, we'll be watching. We'll be making sure to check the headlines. And if you get any news, don't be afraid to drop me a line, and I'll let folks know.
You bet, John. I appreciate you having me on. It's good to talk to you.
Mike, great talking to you again. Say hello to the family for me, and we'll be watching and keeping our ears and eyes open.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right. We have been talking with Mike Maddux, former Major League Baseball pitcher and current pitching coach for the Texas Rangers. Folks, remember, we will talk to Ken Singleton tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in. Enjoy the series.
For more on John Daly, including his blog postings and instructional videos, go to informnotinflamed.com.